Hello, I'm Juliet Galatly, the founder of Viva.
And I'm Tony Wardle, the associate director at Viva and editor of Viva Life magazine.
And we're both sure that you've heard rather a lot about coronavirus of late, and you're probably scrolling through Google, looking things up, and maybe a bit sick of it. But we are going to be looking at coronavirus, its origins, but a lot wider than that. The stuff that perhaps is not talked about so much, Tony, is where it came from, but also why so many infectious diseases are emerging in recent decades.
What I find quite interesting is that it's treated almost like it's appeared from nowhere, and it hasn't, because there's been a long history of similar viruses causing epidemics, not pandemics, and it's all predictable. In fact, there are plenty of people who've been predicting it for years. And in fact, they're saying we're getting away quite lightly with this one, and there will be more and there will be worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And governments have been planning for this for quite some time. And I was quite interested to see online the US government's pandemic response, which they put up many years ago. And it actually included things like get 90 days worth of stocks in. So clearly they've been waiting for something to happen. But I thought maybe we'd go back to basics and just initially just say what a virus is, because I think there's quite a lot of confusion between viruses and bacteria. And I can remember, in fact, I did A-level biology, my degree was zoology, and I can remember, I am going back a long time, but I can remember for some reason really vividly arguing students with lecturers about whether viruses were alive or dead back then. And it's just something that is fascinating, because how can something that's not even alive be so incredibly impactful on supposedly the most sophisticated animal on the planet? And it was something that used to really get people going. And I was looking it up much more recently, and in fact that debate still rages on today. And
I'm just thinking, if you can describe a virus in a way that is easily understood, you're a better person than me.
I'm not sure I'm the right person, but they are smaller than bacteria, much smaller. They do not have any cells. They're incredibly simple, and the sort of the basis of life. You look at seven major categories, and some of those are things like, are they able to carry out their own growth? Are they able to carry out their own metabolism? And the thing is, with some of those questions, the answers are yes. With others, they're no. And basically, you come out of that thinking, well, they're definitely not dead, but they're not alive either. So it's like biology hasn't kind of moved on any further. But what we do know about viruses, of course, is that they need a host to replicate. So you say it's replication with a virus, not reproduction. Whereas bacteria, of course, can reproduce. They are cells. They've got much more sophisticated structure, and so on and so forth. But viruses are really like chemistry sets, in a sense. RNA or DNA, just surrounded by a coating, and they replicate by taking over a host, which in the case of coronavirus is us, and making their cells do the replication for them. And they produce whole new viruses, which never grow. And they reproduce them in their, you know, in their millions. And that's what overcomes our immune system. You know, our immune system could cope with one, but it's the fact that they replicate so very, very quickly.
Can I just clarify that a bit? What you're saying is that they actually take over our cells and use our cells as a reproductive system. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's right.
And so that's why they can't be hit with antibiotics or any other medication, because to kill the virus, you have to kill the cells that host it. And so you kill us.
Well, some antibiotics, well, they react in their mode of action is different for different antibiotics. But for example, with one of them, it's to actually disrupt the cell wall of the bacteria. Well, they don't have cell walls, viruses, so you can't do that. There are antiviral drugs which try and interrupt the replication process, but they're not antibiotics. Antibiotics do not work on viruses.
Right, so these are two very separate and different organisms.
Completely different from each other. One thing I noticed online, if you read sort of the more slightly scientific articles, they'll say that practically all viruses are, you know, attack their hosts and cause disease. That's not true, actually, because most viruses, in fact, live, for want of a better term, more in harmony with their host. Because, of course, it's in the virus's interest, if you want to put it that way, to not kill your host, because otherwise, if you keep killing your host and you become too ferocious and you don't spread, then, of course, you die out as well. So, in fact, most viruses do not kill their hosts.
So am I right in thinking that some viruses have been around for tens of thousands, possibly millions of years, living quite benignly with their hosts, such as bird flu?
I think they're probably, you know, go back to the origins of life. I mean, really interesting, when the human genome was set out, there's about, I don't know, I can't remember now, but about 200 genes that were from bacteria. But a lot of virologists think that, in fact, those genes within our own genetic makeup are, in fact, from viruses. So what they're incredibly good at is mutating, that's changing themselves. So they change their genetic code incredibly rapidly. And sometimes they actually put that new genetic code, the new genes, inside the hosts, and it becomes part of their DNA as it's passed on.
So is the problem now the fact that we're getting new mutations of viruses that haven't had time to modify and become benign, and they're killing people simply because we don't have any resistance to them?
Well, shall we talk about bird flu and the origins of that? Because that kind of explains what you're just saying. So a lot of scientists globally have been preparing for a pandemic because of the outbreak of bird flu. So bird flu, the virus that causes it, originated in wild animals like ducks and has been around for literally millions of years. It doesn't harm ducks. It resides in their gut lining and they basically excrete it out into the water. Another duck comes along when it's, you know, dabbling away in the water and takes it in, and it takes residence in that bird's intestines. And so it goes on, but it does not harm the duck. It lives, you know, happily there. It doesn't show any signs of sickness or anything like that. So, you know, there's a balance there, if you like. Now, what happens when you drag a duck from its natural environment, you put it into, say, a wild market trade, you put it in cages that are above chickens, and it's, you know, the excreta's going on to these land birds. The virus, basically, in simple terms, has a choice to make, obviously not a conscious choice. Either it dies or it mutates to survive in these totally unnatural conditions. So suddenly being a waterborne thing doesn't work for it, does it? So it then mutates so that it can actually infect the lungs so that it can be spread by coughing. So these mutations happen because of what human beings did to this, to the wild birds and these wild market trades in the case of the bird flu. Then, of course, you have situations where, looking at China again, it's only literally, since the early 80s that these massive mega factory farms have sprouted up all over China. So there are now tens and tens of thousands of them, and some of them have literally millions of birds in each place. So all it takes is for, you know, a virus to get through the biosecurity, which, let's face it, is not difficult. And then what happens when you've got millions of these birds together? What chance does that give the flu virus to mutate, not just millions, but billions upon billions upon billions of times? And it's got hosts that are so crammed together, even if you kill one, kill 1,000, kill 10,000, kill 20,000, you just keep going. And you could, that nature, the natural stops on it, a virus becoming too ferocious, have just completely disappeared. The brakes are not there at all. So it becomes more and more ferocious in a way that they would have been prevented from doing so before. Because if, say, for example, they'd gone from a duck to, let's say, a free-range chicken, 100 years ago, that free-range chicken, if it had been too virulent, would have just died. It wouldn't have had a chance to actually pass the virus on. So the virus, you know, the newly mutated virus would have died with it.
The thing that people find it difficult to get their heads around is that all strains of flu originate in birds. They come from birds. And we
all strains of influenza A flu come from birds, and they're the virulent strains, the one that cause epidemics and pandemics. There are strains B and C, which are in people. C is the mildest. B can cause serious illness, but it's never caused an epidemic or a pandemic. But the influenza strain A is the one that always comes from birds.
And this is the one that we should have acted on more strenuously, because we were given a big warning in 1918 when up to 100 million people died at a time when the world population was one third of what it is now. It's believed to may have started in the trenches, in the squalor and filth of the trenches, but it spread around the world, and it was the big one. And that's what scientists have been waiting for ever since, another big one. And although the coronavirus is horrible and is killing people, it is not the big one. It is not another big one, and there will be another big one.
Yeah, and the flu virus that spread in 1918, which killed so many people, and the footage from that is just heartbreaking. That is labelled H1N1, whereas the one that emerged from about 1997 is called H5N1. But since then, there have been various other strains which have also adapted to kill human beings. But the thing is, they're more ferocious at killing us. So, for example, I think in the case of H5N1, it kills about half its human hosts, but it's no good at transmitting from person to person. And, of course, their worry is that at some point we're going to get the combination of being both contagious and deadly. And that's why, you know, a lot of scientists have been saying, actually, as you just, you know, intimated, we're very lucky in this case, because it's looking like the mortality rate for coronavirus is about 1%. Whereas with MERS, it was a lot, lot higher than that. And as I say, with certain flu viruses, it's, you know, ones have already been created.
60% human mortality. That's so scary.
That's, I mean, you're looking at something completely, completely different altogether. And like you said in your article in the latest Viva Life, you know, this is a dress rehearsal. And the fact of the matter is that factory farming has given the conditions for viruses, the perfect conditions for them to mutate and develop ever more deadly strains. And that's what's happened, because if you look at the graphs for the industrialised world, you'll see that infectious diseases were, I'm not completely knocked on the head, but there was, you know, scientists were saying at the start of the last century, we've done it, you know, we've succeeded. It's going to be really boring in our field because there's barely any infectious diseases. And then from the 1980s, if you look at the graphs, the number of infectious, it just suddenly goes through the roof.
And TB is a good instance for that. It disappeared. When I was a lad, it was a death sentence. You got TB and it disappeared. And now it's back again.
So what is it that's enabled all these new infectious diseases, which, you know, in some cases are deadly, to emerge? And the answer is intensive farming worldwide. So I know a lot of people say it is a case of we reap what we sow. I thought Dr. Michael Greger's film is really worth watching, even though it's 10 years old,
really good.
On pandemics. And he sort of classifies there being three phases of disease, doesn't he? Which is like the first phase, you're looking at about 10,000 years ago, when basically human beings started to domesticate animals on some kind of real scale. And then it meant that, you know, well, I thought interesting example is when we domesticated cows and sheep, we also domesticated the rinderpest virus, which turned into human measles. And in fact, has killed in the last just 150 years, 200 million people. You know, before that, we just didn't have the contact with those wild animals in the same kind of scale, anything like. You look at so many diseases. You look at, I didn't know, for example, that whooping cough came from domesticating pigs. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Smallpox likely came from camel pox, and so on and so forth.
So all the big infectious diseases that come through animals.
That's right. And today, you know, looking at the new diseases that are emerging, almost half of them are coming from viruses. And the vast majority of those are coming from what are called zoonotic diseases. That means the virus is able to jump from animal to human beings. And that's why I get a bit dismayed, don't you, on social media when people are sort of coming up with these conspiracy theories as if this is something that's jumped out of nowhere, when in fact this is happening all the time. And
There's some scientist, mad scientist with glasses and a bald head, who's sitting there cooking it up for world control. Dear God, we have full-time education and research is there at the touch of a button. And still they're going on about it. And it's all so that of a vaccination being introduced, which will inject us with a chip so everybody can control. I mean, they're so bloody stupid, these people. Who would want to control them? But there we go. You know, you can't defeat a good conspiracy theory. And the funny thing is, I think there's a gene in people for conspiracy theories, because those who buy into one seem to buy into them all. And, you know, global warming is a sham. The Twin Tower, it just goes on and on and on. This is not a mad scientist. This is science.
It is science. And like we said before, the world's governments are waiting for the next pandemic. And this, I guess, like you say, is a dress rehearsal. And we just wonder what is going to happen in future unless this is truly a major, major wake-up call. But just before we talk about the future, I just want to make clear the origins of coronavirus, because we've talked a lot about flu viruses because of the obvious worries about that being the next pandemic after this one. Well, coronavirus, that has emerged because of the trade in wildlife, which, as we all know, these wildlife markets, or the wet markets, exist all the way across China and beyond, in Vietnam. And in these places, I'm sure people have seen footage of them, and I'm not going to describe it too much because it's so horrendous and so upsetting. But the actual scale and variety of the species is mind-blowing. And, of course, one of those species was one of the bat species. Another one was, of course, the pangolin. And I think most people probably in Britain hadn't even heard of pangolins before this happened. But, in fact, they're the most trafficked wild mammal on the entire planet, which is very, very shocking. And seeing the footage of them, I found really heartrending, because to defend themselves against the person, they just roll up into a ball, and your heart goes out to these poor creatures. They're scaly mammals. They look like anteaters. They've got long tongs that flick out, and in fact, they are killed for the scales, for so-called Chinese medicine that's supposed to do things like make a man last longer in bed. And in fact, the scales are, very similar to our nails. The whole basis of this Chinese medicine is completely scientifically false, which is upsetting as well. And they're killed as a delicacy, so-called delicacy, for the meat trade. So it is thought now, the latest thinking I looked up about 4 days ago, where they looked at the genetic codes of the latest coronavirus outbreak, and it looks like it's a combination of the bats, which are also traded in these markets, and that virus managing to get inside the pangolin. And then there was a genetic change within the pangolin, which enabled it to become infectious to people. Now, I know that China, which is really good news, sort of like this, the silver lining, that they did end the trade in these wildlife markets, the breeding of wild animals, but also the selling of them. The sad news is that Australia's ABC did a documentary very recently, and even though they've been banned, they showed that criminal syndicates have these wildlife markets, literally, so many of them, covering China and Vietnam, and they're very much up and running. So it has to be much more in China than changing the law. It has to be a cultural shift where the government really shift and make it absolutely complete no-no.
Is this not a case for global action against them? Because it doesn't just affect Chinese people, it affects the whole world. So is this now a call for the whole world to demand change? And I don't mean just in China as well, but in this country too.
Absolutely. I think it has to be a global call for change, because if you look at different countries all over the world, they've all got their own cases of this. You know, you look at Ebola, which kills 90%, almost all people it, infests, because viruses are parasites. And that came from consuming chimpanzees. And that's on another continent altogether. And you look at so many of these diseases and it comes from us exploiting animals in one form or another. You look at mares, it's from exploiting camels. And that's incredibly deadly. So we have to look at our own relationship with animals fundamentally. This is not just about China. Absolutely not. I mean, the pandemic that is happening now, it could have come from Britain. It could have come from our factory farms. There is absolutely no point in this turning inward and becoming so parochial and jingoistic. It's not about that. This is about a global major problem in the way that we treat animals, the way that we view them. And that is what has to be tackled at a very fundamental level. And it has to be everybody joining in with this, Viva, but also on an intergovernmental scale, the World Health Organization, we need the United Nations. We need everybody tackling this now and taking it seriously.
What I can't understand, and I really, really can't, and I've struggled, is that we know that degenerative diseases, that those are the non-infectious diseases that kill most people in the West, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and so on, they all have their roots in factory farming. The consumption of animal products, of animal protein and saturated animal fat. We know this is a fact. We know it's a fact. And yet we've allowed factory farms to swallow up antibiotics by the lorry load. 75% of all antibiotics across the world are fed to animals. And we do nothing about it. We have cancer research researching a cure. We have Alzheimer's researching a cure. What about prevention? Stop eating factory farms. Stop eating meat altogether, all animal products. And for God's sake, government, bring an end to these cesspits of infection. And it's not just bacterial infections that run rife in factory farms, and you should know, you've been in more than most people, there are viral infections too, and they can mutate, and we are faced not just with the bacterial problem but the viral problem as well. Is that not so?
Absolutely. And I think unless we change, let's face it, it is going to happen again and again. And again, and at some point, that virus will be contagious, it will be ferocious, it will be deadly, and we'll have a pandemic on our hands, which creates fear, and basically we will be, you know, practically wiped out as a species. And I think we have, you know, we're at a crossroads now. Either we go down that road and that happens, or we listen to this wake-up call. We listen to what's happened to the Earth with global warming. We're in the sixth mass extinction on planet Earth. We've almost run out of antibiotics, so we're not going to be able to treat bacterial infections. We're creating pandemics from the way that we factory farm animals or trade them through wildlife markets or run roads through the, you know, tropical forests, destroying all the wildlife habitats. So we now have a choice to make, that either we do things differently, we act with compassion, wisdom and kindness and true intelligence, or we continue being like the viruses, a parasite on this earth, destroying everything in our path.
Surely the time has come for joint action, everybody, with one slogan: no going back.
Absolutely agree, everybody. End factory farming before it ends us. There's no going back.